This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Welcome to the show, New Beginnings. On our program today, we feature a couple of individuals who have unique positions in our country. The first is Andy Lueger. He is the U.S. attorney serving in the Department of Justice. He'll be joining us today. Why? Because he is in his job the second time around. He is beyond 50, and he is still working to reduce crime in the state of Minnesota. He'll be talking about those efforts. I'm particularly interested because he still has the vim and the vigor to offer his talents in a way that benefits a lot of people in our community. Also, we talk with the former head coach of the North High Polars. He's ending his 42-year career after coaching young men at three different high schools. He joins us today talking about his illustrious championship career. His name is Larry McKenzie. Also, Leibel Sternbach is here talking about finance, plus representatives from AARP Minnesota. This is New Beginnings, and this is our show. And joining us right now is the Hall of Fame basketball coach for the North High Polars, and we'll talk about his illustrious career. Larry McKenzie joins us this morning, and congratulations.
Good morning, Freddie, and thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You know, I mentioned in our warm-up, I said, I don't know, is congratulations the correct thing to say when you retire? I don't run into that every day.
Well, you probably get used to it. You know, I mean, people are winding down, so yes, sir.
I understand. 42 years as a champion, on and off the court with the hundreds of students that you've touched the lives of with Patrick Henry, the Academy of Holy Angels, and 9 years with the North High Polars. What event stands out the most for you when you think about your career, sir?
Well, you know, I mean, I, to be honest with you, I think for me, you know, in addition to winning the championships, and in particular, you know, having won four titles with my son, Lawrence McKenzie, Freddie, I think the thing that I'm most proud of, man, is, you know, when I came into the district, African-American males were graduating at a rate of about 28%. And so to be involved and see young men who look like me graduate at 100%, graduate on time, and then, you know, we were blessed to have 100% of our kids either go to a two-year or four-year school. And so for me, that's the highlight of my career.
That is so exciting. And when you think about, okay, I'm going to put you on the spot, of all the hundreds of students that you've coached over time, who are your three top favorites?
But you wouldn't do that to me on air with 80 something thousand people listening. You know, like any good parent, right? And I would say any good coach, they were all my favorites.
The right answer.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You've battled through a lot of difficulties in your career. What was the one that was most satisfying that you've overcome, which would be a primer for someone else who's coming behind you to say, this is how you deal with it?
I think the greatest challenge this year, in my career, to be honest with you, was the loss of D. Hill, the young man that we lost, last February, that was shot on Penn and Golden Valley Road. So I would say, you know, the most difficult thing was just getting the kids through that. It was probably the most challenging thing that I ever had to deal with, Freddie. In this sense is that to see, you know, you're a father, so you see your kids hurt and you can't, and to only be able to say that you're sorry. But, you know, with community, we were able to bring in mental health therapists and sports psychiatrists and other people like that to navigate through that situation. So, you know, that was the most challenging. And then, of course, I mean, you know, anybody that's coaching in the city of Minneapolis know, you know, I mean, the resources, right? Having, you know, year after year to be consistent in the you know, raising funds and the resources to make sure that our kids had what their suburban counterparts had.
How much of the funds that you have to raise as a coach, how percentage-wise, would the school district provide 50% and you have to go raise the other 50%? What was that like?
Well, you would ask that question. I mean, and that was one of the challenges, Freddie, that just in terms of one of the things that, you know, made me think a lot about retirement. The district, so I had about 10 coaches on my staff. The district paid for three.
Oh,
and
no.
And I raised 100% of the funds.
That's got to be tough. In addition to coaching these students and trying to get the best from them.
Well, it really is. I mean, and you have to think about it. Coaching is not necessarily a full time job. I mean, it's a very small stipend that you get coaching high school basketball. So. You know, I mean, and then you put even the money that you made would end up going back into the program, feeding kids, you know, helping them out with different kinds of things like that. So it is a great challenge. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, sometimes a lot of coaches don't know, you know, that, you know, it's a whole lot more than X's and O's. And so, you know, I always tell, I tell a story that when I first got into it, I honestly thought that I'd just be, you know, going to practice, offense, defense, out of bounds plays, but it became a whole lot more than that.
Very interesting. Everybody, Coach Larry McKenzie with us this morning on the heels of his retirement. So when is the last day? When is the whistle hung up for good?
Well, the last day was really officially last Monday. And I will say, I mean, one thing I want to say, so for all those people that think, you know, I mean, I don't think I'll ever retire, but just in terms of, you know, taking a break, being a head guy, you know, I'm going to find a way. I think, you know, as I've said to a lot of other folks in the media, you know, one of my biggest focuses right now, I want to spend time coaching coaches. I want to spend time making sure guys understand that they do have to do fundraising, that there's life skill development, that there's character development, and all of those things that go into establishing a great program. And so I'm hoping to share, as people often say, the recipe and the secret sauce, you know, with young coaches out in Minnesota and around the country.
It is so interesting. You know, when I first, and this is just straight up the truth, when I first heard that you were retiring, I said, wait a minute, he's not old enough to retire. What is he, what, 37, 38?
Wish, right?
You don't retire at 38 years old?
I think that's the other thing. There was a misconception. A lot of people thought I was much younger than I am, Freddie. I'm at the retirement age. I'm 65 years old.
And going strong. What would you say to students right now, and most importantly, what would you say to parents as they're thinking about their students playing high school sports, contemplating college sports, and wondering whether or not this is something for their students who are aspiring, maybe not even thought about it, but maybe they should guide them into this area? What would you say to them? What would you say to the families?
So first and foremost, Freddie, I would say let them be kids and grow up. You know what I'm saying? Like, one of the hardest things, man, is I saw so many 14, 15, 16-year-olds that never got a chance to be teenagers, you know, just because of things that was happening. So, you know, wherever they go, it should be fun. I would tell them, first thing, find a coach that you really trust. You know what I'm saying? That I think that's important, somebody that you believe in, that have the same kind of value systems and those things to put your kid around. I think that's critical. In terms of, you know, molding kids. And so, you know, find a coach that you can trust, you know, let them go, and just make sure that your kid is having fun.
Last question for you this morning, Larry McKenzie, is tell us about the role that faith has played in your life and how you relate to students and families.
Well, first and foremost, I tell everybody I'm a believer. I don't hide from it. My playbook has always been from Genesis to Revelation. And while I, you know, I didn't throw the Bible at kids, I made sure that they understood, you know, and whether it's, you know, God, Jesus, Allah, whatever it is, you know, all of us need to have a relationship with a higher power. And Freddie, I mean, in all reality, man, I say this all the time. I don't think I was the greatest X and O guys, but I do know that I had God favor in my life, and it had a lot to do with my success as a high school basketball coach and whatever other things that I've done in my life.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Faith wasn't on the other side of the court coaching against you, too?
I cheated a little bit. It may have been on the other side, but what I had was favor.
My bad. Do you have a final thought for our Twin Cities audience and even those listening around the country to you this morning?
You know what? I guess having this opportunity, I mean, for those that are listening, I mean, race, color, creed, one thing that we've got to learn that we are all better together. And so we need to start coming together so that we can make changes and understanding that our young people are our greatest resource. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're the ones that can be controlling, making decisions about our future. So we need to make sure that they have the right tools and everything that they need to be the best people that they can be.
He's Larry McKenzie, 42 years in the game. I just got this text quote question for you. I've been told to ask you, why does your out of bounds play work so often and so well?
Oh, it's a great question because people see it 1,000 times. And,
yes, it can't stop it.
You know, over and over. And just, you know, but I tell people all the time, I've always said this, I mean, it sounds a little bit arrogant, but I don't care if you know my play, it's the execution. And so, I mean, and I guess the question would be is because, you know, the kids that have ran the out of bound play, they've done a great job of executing it over the years. But I'm amazed too, Freddie. I mean, you know, at Patrick Henry, we started every game with alley-oop, and you would just think, you know, somebody would make an adjustment on that long pass at the beginning of the game, and for 9 years they never did.
That is always so startling. Larry, thank you so much for being with us and working with our schedule this morning and us with yours and sharing with our audience.
Thank you for having me.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
It's the weekend, and hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and with me right now is the State Director for AARP Minnesota, Kathy McClear. Hello, Kathy, and welcome back.
Hey, Freddie. Thanks for having me.
We've got the midterm elections right around the corner, and AARP is providing its members with a lot of information as usual. What is the focus this year? What has changed in terms of the voting process, if anything?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Freddie. So, of course, the primary election in Minnesota is Tuesday, August 9th. And AARP is really focused on making sure people understand how, when, and where to vote safely. As folks know, there were some very minor changes during the pandemic with how people could vote absentee. One specifically being the requirement if you voted absentee and sent that ballot in by mail, you didn't have to have that witness signature or a notary signature, and your ballot had to arrive, had to be postmarked by 8 p.m. on election day. Those two things go back to business as usual. So if you decided to vote absentee this year and mail your ballot in, you do need to have that witness signature from another registered voter or a notary, and that ballot has to be at your county elections office by election day. You got to have it postmarked well before. So if folks were thinking about mailing in their ballot, you might want to get that done this weekend so it can get there by election day, or better yet, just drop it off at your county election office in person so it gets there.
AARP Minnesota and AARP nationally has had a long history of fighting for voters, especially those who are 50 plus.
Yeah, the 50 plus are really the nation's most powerful voters, and they are going to be the deciders in this election in 2022. And AARP firmly believes that those individuals, people 50 plus, need to make their voices heard on those really important issues. So things like keeping Social Security and Medicare strong for future recipients, addressing the cost of prescription drugs. We pay way too much in this country for prescription drugs. And we need to hold our elected officials and ask the candidates where they stand on how they're going to address those issues. And, of course, support for family caregivers. So family caregivers really are so critical in our long-term care delivery system here in Minnesota, providing unpaid care to their parents, their spouses, and other loved ones. And it's really important to ask those candidates where they stand on those issues.
Everyone, we're talking with Kathy McClear, the state director for AARP Minnesota. I know there's been a lot of questions, especially since the last election, about voter opportunity, identification to vote, voting in person. Can someone help you at the polls and all the rest of it? Can you just tick off how people can vote if they're so inclined?
Sure. Well, we have no excuse absentee voting here in Minnesota, and so you can vote from home. All you have to do is request that absentee ballot from the Secretary of State's office. You can get that by calling the Secretary of State's office, or you can go to mnvotes.gov and request that ballot. You can do that for the primary election on August 9th or the general election coming up on November 8th. You can also early vote in person, so you can go to your county election office and vote ahead of election day in person, or you can just simply go to the polls as you normally do on election day and cast your ballot in person. And just a quick note, with some congressional redistricting, you just want to check to make sure you know where your polling place is, because that may have changed, and who appears on your ballot might have changed. So it's really important to do your homework before you go vote.
Can you talk a second about identification, whether we need it or not to vote?
Sure. Well, if you are a registered voter, you already provided your ID, such as a valid driver's license or a state-issued ID, and you had to also provide some proof of that you are a resident in Minnesota, so something that can, like a lease or a bill or a bank statement that confirms your name or address. You only need to bring that on election day if you have to register to vote on election day, or if you have to update your registration, or if you haven't voted in 4 years. Otherwise, you do not need your identification when you show up on election day to vote.
We've covered a lot of ground with regard to voting, and that primary is coming up in just a few days. Where can our listeners go to get more information about this all-important vote and to make sure that if they are so inclined, they can vote if they choose to?
Yeah, we've made it really easy. Just go to aarp.org/mnvotes, and all the information will be right there.
Livable cities, lower prescription drug costs, support for family caregivers, a number of reasons why it's important to vote. Kathy McClear, can't thank you enough for being with us this weekend on New Beginnings.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
And now let's take a look at what has happened this past week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is calling Taiwan one of the freest societies in the world. Pelosi delivered remarks to the Taiwanese parliament this week after being warned against it by China. Beijing considers democratic Taiwan to be part of the communist mainland. Pelosi is the highest ranking U.S. official to visit the island in 25 years. And Kansas is the first state in the United States to vote on abortion access since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Voters rejected an amendment that would have stripped the right to access abortion care from the state constitution. And former White House counsel Pat Cipollone has reportedly been subpoenaed by a federal grand jury investigating events that led to last year's Capitol riot. The New York Times says it's unclear which jury has called on Cipollone to testify. One grand jury is investigating efforts to overturn the 2020 election, while another is focused on the events of January 6. Cipollone is believed to be the highest-ranking White House official from the final days of the Trump administration to be called to testify in a federal probe. And a New Jersey lawmaker is scheduling hearings about the high price of Bruce Springsteen tickets. State Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin says he's concerned about vendor pricing and fees in connection with Bruce Springsteen's 2023 tour. Tickets for some of next year's tour dates went on sale last week and drew prices that were thousands of dollars per ticket. It happened this week. I'm Freddie Bell, and we've got more on the way. President Biden appointed Andy Lugar and was sworn in on March 30th as the 37th United States Attorney for the District of Minnesota. This is his second tour, and 2 months after that, he announced a new initiative, a violent crime strategy, along with federal, state, and local law enforcement partners to try to stem the violent crime in the Twin Cities. Good morning, U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar. Glad you're with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Before we really get into this, why did you decide to accept the nomination and come back a second time around?
Thanks for asking. it's my wife asked the same question.
I see.
It's It's really to use whatever abilities I have to try to address this serious problem of violent crime. It's gonna take a lot of work, a lot of collaboration, kind of all hands on deck, and so sitting on the sidelines didn't appeal to me.
I see. So what are the details, sir, of the strategy, and why should it work when other strategies have failed?
Yeah, I think the problem we're facing right now, having listened to community leaders, violence interrupters, law enforcement, and even defendants themselves who we talk to on a regular basis, the problem we're facing right now is the appearance in the minds of a number of our youth, and not just the youth but others, is a lack of swift consequences for violent action. That's number one. And number two is not just the numbers that we're seeing, you know, a spike in violent crime, but also the nature of it. It is more violent, more militaristic, more dangerous than anything we've seen before. So what we're employing is a threefold strategy. One, to address carjackings, gun crimes, particularly those involving switches, which are devices that turn pistols into automatic weapons, mm-hmm. and gangs, quickly, swiftly, with sure justice, with real consequences, and publicizing that. That's the second part of the strategy. And that's, you know, one thing I'm talking about everywhere is make sure that those who are out there in the community thinking about doing this understand what federal consequences mean and hopefully act as a deterrent. Second, we are listening to and trying to broadcast the voices of the victims, people who have lived through carjackings and shootings, family members of victims, so that our community really hears those voices and understands what it means. And then third, working very closely with violence interrupters and interveners, supporting their work, amplifying their work, and showing up at meetings with gang members, as I'm doing next week, to talk to them about finding another path, because this path is not a good one.
We're talking with U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar. We're talking about his federal violent crime strategy. Just earlier this week, the 4th Precinct in Minneapolis was shot at. Homes around the area have bullet holes this morning. Last night, automatic weapons were being fired in downtown Minneapolis. What does this expanded capacity mean to stop this type of crime, sir?
So the other thing about today's problem is, as we all know, we have fewer resources at the local level than we used to. We have fewer cops on the beat, fewer analysts investigating crimes, and so bringing in federal resources helps. Our local partners are, you know, happy to join with us and to work with us. So the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, Homeland Security, and others working with the BCA and local law enforcement really is like a surge of resources, not so much on the ground, but in the investigative and analytical background to figure out who's doing this and to help us make cases.
So will there be plotting? So, for example, will you be able to anticipate where these crimes may take place before they actually happen, just based on the metrics that you get?
A little bit. I don't want to overstate the ability to do that. That is one of the goals. And a lot of that, by the way, comes from family members who contact law enforcement or the violence interrupters who are on the streets doing heroic work to let us know that they're seeing something brewing. It can be online, it can be in the home, it can be on the streets. That's really helpful, and we sort of pair that up with our own research and analytics. But, you know, this isn't the movie Minority Report where we can predict crime ahead of time with precision. You know, we can all discuss whether we want to live in that world or not, but the world we live in is one where we've got to be constantly vigilant, planning, and talking to each other.
I'm understanding, sir, we're talking with U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar. I'm understanding that you've already are getting some results. I understand that you're, quote, hot on the trails of many individuals who've done violence and those who arm them who deal in illegal firearms. Tell us about some of the successes you've had so far.
So a number of groups that have engaged in violent carjackings, and I always tell people, we can't separate carjackings from other types of crimes. It's often gang members that are involved. It's often people who are also selling fentanyl who are involved. These folks have figured out a little business for themselves to brutally assault drivers of cars, take their money, take their phone apps to get money transferred to them, and sometimes take their ATM cards and passwords and get money that way as well. We have been successfully working through a number of these entities that have been taking this action. We indicted a group recently who preyed upon Uber and Lyft drivers, mostly immigrants, who are, you know, kind of defenseless in their cars when they get pulled over and stopped and beaten and robbed for their cars. We've begun to work our way through those organizations. Same thing with gang activity, and the same thing with people who are selling fentanyl, which isn't of itself deadly, but they're also carrying powerful weapons to protect their trade.
Since the mid-80s, you've been involved in trying to keep people safe. Is this the most violent time that you've ever seen? And does the increased violence have anything to do with the automatic weapons that we're seeing on the streets today?
Yes to both questions. So I moved from New York to Minnesota in 1992. I've been here 30 years. I've never seen it like this. If you had told me in 1992 when I moved here that we would have this conversation today in this beautiful city and in this beautiful state, I would not believe you. So yes, it is worse now, and part of the reason is the easy access that people have to these very violent weapons and the accessories that come with them. And we're not the only, you know, we're not the only ones facing this, but the people in Minneapolis, you know, are not necessarily asking me, how are the folks in St. Louis doing? We want to solve problems here. And so we're really, it's like I said earlier, it's an all hands on deck effort. We need everybody involved to stop this, turn it around, and get our folks on a more productive lifestyle.
Last question for you this morning. What would be your message to the people? I'll say it this way. This station happens to reach better than 89% of all African Americans in this 11-county metro. What would be your message, if you have one, to would-be offenders or those who are actually involved in it? And how can we report these kinds of activities, those who find themselves victims or close to the violence that takes place in our communities?
So we're going to start a series of PSAs and other announcements that we'll put out on social media and elsewhere. The message to those who are thinking about their futures, what their lives should look like, or who are trapped in a life of violence right now, is get out. There is an opportunity to turn this around. There are services available. There are mentors available. There's a path for you that doesn't involve federal prison. We want you on that path. As far as everybody else is concerned, anybody who's listening to this can play a role. We all can play a role in just talking about and amplifying what is happening in our communities more broadly. It's not just Minneapolis. It's throughout the state. It's throughout the country. We all need to make this a high priority to turn this around and get back to a more peaceful and caring community that takes care of each other.
Mr. Attorney, we only have 30 seconds left. I'd like to give it to you for a final thought.
First of all, thank you for having me on, and I'd love to come back, and I'd love to hear the feedback from people who are listening. We all play a role in this. There's no one magic bullet solution to solving this problem. It's everything from intervention by people who know how to work with those in gangs, as well as families and community leaders all banding together on this. It's a time for unity, not division. I hope we can get there.
From the United States Department of Justice, he is the United States Attorney for the District of Minnesota, Andy Lugar. Sir, thank you so much for being with us and sharing important points that I'm sure our listeners are sad to hear, but also grateful to hear at the same time. Thanks for being with us.
Have a great day. Thank you so much.
You too.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Now's my favorite time of the program when we turn our attention to talk finance with Lybal Sternbach. Lybal is an amazing author. He is the Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. Lybal, welcome back to the program. So glad to have you on New Beginnings. How are you this week?
I am doing fantastic. How are you today?
Unbelievable. Thank you so much for asking. The website, I want to get that out of the way at first because we've got a lot to get to today. It's yieldsforyou.com. And you've got some special tabs there as well.
Yep, we got two tabs that you're really going to want to look at. We have a classes tab where we have upcoming and recorded classes that you can access on retirement. So everything A to Z that you need to know as you're transitioning into and through retirement. And then we also have a resources tab where you'll find guides and links to other websites and resources to help you on your retirement journey.
Let's talk about financial advisors. And until you and I met, I didn't realize that there were different types of financial advisors or counselors. A question from one of our listeners, Lania, she was asking, what type of financial advisor have you found to be the most helpful for those on the verge of retirement?
This is a little bit of a trick question of, you know, when we're thinking about financial advisors and retirement, there's a broad spectrum of people who can help us. And it's important to understand, you know, where each of them are coming from so that we can understand the type of advice that they're giving us. Because each person who's got, you know, their perspective and their training, that will influence the solutions that they find. And when we think about financial advisors, I need you to think of this analogy. To a hammer, everything is a nail, right? And that has never been truer than financial services. In financial services, we have a whole bunch of really amazing people who are super passionate about what they do. And they're super passionate about helping people. And they learn these tools and they learn, you know, some amazing tool and how it can be used in lots of amazing ways. And then they go and they try to apply it to every situation. And the thing is that these tools can be used in every single situation. Now, does that make it the best tool for that situation? No, but it is an amazing tool for that situation. And it can be used that way. And it has been used successfully for lots of people. But that doesn't make it the best tool. And unfortunately, the financial services industry is still, I would say, a little immature when you compare it to some other industries, in that we don't have standardizations of, you know, what we call things and what the different roles are of people in our industry. When you go to, you know, get your taxes done, there's basically two people that you're going to deal with. You're going to deal with a tax preparer or you're going to deal with a CPA. And those are, you know, two professions. And in order to become either one of those, there's a set process. To become a financial advisor, to call yourself a financial advisor, it doesn't take anything. In fact, in a lot of areas, it's not even a regulated term. So when you're looking at, you know, I want to find somebody to help me in retirement, you are going to find a huge spectrum of people. And what you will find is you will find on the one side, people who are like financial coaches. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you will have, you know, these full service boutique financial advisor wealth firms that have people working in their office that specialize in all the different specialties of retirement planning. And you've got the entire gamut in between. So when we're looking for a financial advisor to help us with retirement, what we're really looking for is somebody who we can work with, who is experienced helping people transition into retirement. And then we need to go shopping because we need to know what it is that we're looking for. And we need to find somebody or maybe multiple people who can provide that solution. And this is, I've, over the years, over the last, you know, 15 years or so of working with people who are transitioning into retirement, I think there's a real gap missing of people who specialize in helping people do this transition and figuring out who they need to hire or do it themselves. And I think that it's very doable to do it yourself. But I think also if you wanted to hire someone, you need to have a basic set of knowledge so that you know who you're hiring and what they're going to do. And oftentimes it means hiring multiple people.
So how do you find a good financial advisor?
So the first thing that you want to do when you're looking for a financial advisor is you want to understand how they're compensated. Because how they're compensated is going to be the biggest bias in terms of what they're going to recommend. So going back to that hammer analogy, if you are talking to an advisor who the way they get compensated is by selling mutual funds, and they exist. These advisors exist who all they get paid is a commission on selling mutual funds. They are always going to find a mutual fund solution for you, right? So you need to know that going in, that this person, this recommendation you're getting is going to be mutual funds. It's kind of like going to an ENT and saying, my throat hurts. Well, they're going to tell you that your problem is your throat. And if you go to an allergist, they're going to tell you you're probably having an allergic reaction to the pollen, right? And so financial advisor, find out how they're compensated, right? Find out what their education is, because each of them will have different levels of education. Some are only licensed. And if they only have a license, that literally means that they just passed a 100-question test. So that doesn't mean that they actually have any formal training in your area that you need in retirement. It generally means that they understand somewhat about products. So you want to find out what their education is. And then you want to find out what their values are, right? What's their outlook in life? What's the worldview that they view the world as? What's that lens? Because maybe they view the world differently than you. Mm. Maybe their expectations of, you know, the market, right? I've worked with a lot of advisors who do not understand how the markets work, and they view it as gambling. And maybe that aligns with you, or maybe that's really against everything that you believe in. So you need to find an advisor who their philosophy and their approach to life matches what you want, and that has the technical capability and then the actual ability to deliver, right? So you may have an advisor who you philosophically, you believe the same thing and you want, you know, what they say, and they have the education of being able to create a great retirement plan and great tax plan and great investment plan. They may have all the credentials, but they're working at a firm that doesn't allow them to implement it. Right. If, you know, for instance, if someone works for, you know, a Morgan Stanley or an Edward Jones or a Primerica or, you know, any one of these companies, they're called captive companies, and they restrict what solutions their advisors can sell. They only let them provide solutions within their fund family, within their toolbox of solutions. And so it may be very possible that there's a better solution with a different company, but they're not allowed to recommend it. And so you want to know that that bias exists. That doesn't mean that they can't build you a great plan, but they may not be able to build you the best plan, or they may not be able to tell you that it's not the best plan. So you need to understand where those biases are. And there are people who are completely independent, but that doesn't mean that they're not biased, right? They may be completely biased against captive people who have restrictions on them. So you just want to go with your eyes open. And I think I've come to the belief that you as an investor, you as the person who's hiring these people, you need to have a basic set of knowledge to be able to hire them, because you need to hold them accountable. You need to know how to ask the right questions so that you know, are you being sold something, or are you being advised with, you know, with your best interest in mind?
Interesting. Do you provide or do you have a set of questions that a person like me could use to interview potential financial advisors?
So I'm actually putting that together, and I'm going to have that in my new book that I'm working on. It's called The Simple Path to Golden Retirement. And in there, I'm going to have an entire chapter on how to hire a financial advisor. And I'm thinking that I'm going to put together a course on this. So keep an eye on the website. Look out for that book, because that is something that's coming. How do I hire a financial advisor? In the meantime, I did an article with LegalZoom. If you go to my website on in the news section, there is a link to an article that I did with LegalZoom that I walk through how to hire a financial advisor. It's a pretty in-depth article. So that would be the first starting point.
Interesting. We're talking with Leibel Sternbach, and we're talking about financial advisors. I'm curious, is there a basic set of qualifications that any financial advisor should have, in your opinion, Leibel?
I don't think so. I think what matters more is that your philosophies match up. I think that their biases, that at least they're upfront about it and you know what they are. I've worked with and I have seen amazing advisors and coaches across the entire spectrum. I worked with a guy who his specialty was helping people who were in bankruptcy, well, helping people who were underwater on their mortgages. And he would get them, he would work with the bank and get them out from being underwater and get them being financially solvent again. And he had no credentials. He was not an attorney. It was just something that he went through and he learned the system and he taught it to other people. And he made money in doing that with negotiating with the bank. But if you looked at him as a financial advisor, you would never look at him as a financial advisor. And in fact, the states may, eventually go after him, saying that he was giving investment advice without a license. But the fact is that he probably did more good for more people than most people with a license.
Very interesting. We only have about a minute left in this segment. Can you give us a couple of red flags we should be looking out for when selecting a financial advisor?
Yes. So red flags, you want to go to FINRA.org or BrokerCheck.org. You want to look them up and see if they have any disclosures on their listings. Not being listed doesn't mean anything unless they say they're a broker. But if they're licensed, generally, they'll be listed there. So that's if they've got something, red flags, that's one. Google their name, right? See what's about them on the internet. Because chances are, if somebody is up to something nefarious, it's going to be online. There's going to be articles about it. There's going to be people blasting them, right? So that's one. Another thing is, financial advisors, good financial advisors, always want to put your interest first. So if you ever feel like you're being sold or you're being pressured, walk away, because that person doesn't have your best interest. The other thing, and this is going to be counterintuitive, if it feels slick, that to me is a huge red flag, because something weird that I've learned is that the financial advisors who are super capable, right, who are really good at their jobs, they're nerds. They're the definition of a geek. And that means they're not super slick. That means they're not their presentations, have issues with them. They don't come off as, $1 million. But they're the ones who are super capable. And so I trust the geek over the super slick salesperson. And then finally, I think the biggest red flag to me would be if the advisor asks you ever to make out a check to them. Right. If they ever ask you to give them authorization over your accounts, whenever they cross those boundaries, they'll give you a very good reason for it. But that is a huge red flag. Walk away. Or if they give you guarantees and they say, well, you're going to make money without losing. Right. It doesn't exist. Walk away. If it sounds too good to be true, walk away.
And we won't walk away. Well, we'll have to step away. We'll be right back. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Leibel's website is LeibelOnFire.com. That's LeibelOnFire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead. In our never-ending effort to find valuable information and insight in all areas, it's time to bring in Cassie Crandall with this week's Three Things.
Thank you, Freddie. All right, my thing number one this week. Wow. All women rowing team breaks world record in race across the Pacific Ocean. A racing team that's part of LAT 35 Racing, their first female team. They started in San Francisco making their way to Waikiki, Hawaii. That's 2,400 nautical miles. They finished the race in 34 days, 14 hours, and 11 minutes, breaking the previous record by 24 hours. Way to go, ladies. LAT35 partnered with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America to raise money and awareness for mental health throughout the journey. The ladies' team surpassed its goal of $10,000, raising over $12,000 for the cause. They faced some challenges on their journey, cold weather, rainy weather, some sort of flying fish, and an unknown dolphin or something like that that actually damaged one of the rudders on their boat. And the boat's bearings began to corrode halfway through the journey. So big congratulations to Libby, Sophia, Brooke, and Adrian. Way to go, ladies. Okay, my thing number two. And as long as we're talking about sea life and ocean, I had to throw this one into the mix. A breaching whale jumps out of the ocean and lands on top of a Massachusetts fishing boat last Sunday. Apparently, a boat anchored off of Whitehorse Beach in Plymouth, Massachusetts, was attacked when a large whale breached the water and crashed into the boat's bow. All the passengers appeared to be at the stern of the boat, and there were no reported injuries from the incident. Whoever made the video of this happening said the whales are sending a clear message. And finally, my thing number three. What are you doing this weekend? Did you know that there is the immersive Van Gogh exhibit going on in Minneapolis at Lighthouse Minneapolis, August 5th? And there's a Minnesota Twins game versus Toronto Blue Jays at Target Field, also August 5th. And if you want a journey to Freeborn County, 38 Special is performing at the Freeborn County Fairgrounds, August 5th at 8:30 in Albert Lea. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Joining us now is the director of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases and also the chief medical advisor to President Biden, Anthony Fauci. Good morning and welcome, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Of course, we all know that President Biden is dealing with COVID. Do you see it as a teachable moment when 2.5 years we're still trying to get people vaccinated?
Well, I think the teachable moment is that anyone and everyone is susceptible to getting infected. And what we need to do is to properly utilize the interventions, the highly effective interventions, such as vaccination and boosting and availability and utilization of antiviral drugs like Paxlovid and other drugs or monoclonal antibodies, and testing frequently so that you know if you are infected to get into the proper care and to protect others, particularly family members and susceptible individuals, so that you don't inadvertently infect them, if in fact you don't have any symptoms.
Now, finally, you mentioned inspiration. You want to be an inspiration. Can you give a word of inspiration for folks who are still on the fence about whether or not to take this vaccine to protect themselves and those around them?
We know from overwhelming data that the likelihood of a person who's unvaccinated and even unboosted to having a severe outcome leading to hospitalization and death is overwhelmingly more likely for an unvaccinated person than for a vaccinated person. And this is particularly true because many members of minority communities, African Americans, Hispanics, and others, have underlying conditions to a greater degree than others, such as hypertension and diabetes and asthma. So it's very important for everyone, but particularly members of minority communities, to get vaccinated. That would be my very strong message to those people that I really do care about.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci. I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. The color of the day is cranberry. Don't be caught dead in less than anything cranberry. Cranberry is our color of the day. And hello to all the fine folks in Red Wing. Thank you for checking us out on New Beginnings. And did you know that today is Homemade Pie Day? It's a day to celebrate a dish that has existed since the ancient Egyptians. Pies have been featured in one form or the other in several cultures around the world, from the ancient Greeks to the Romans to the British and eventually to the Americans. And today, pie has become a symbol of American life. It can be eaten as a meal, as a dessert, or as a snack. Did you know that until the 15th century, pies usually only contained meat or fish, but they soon included fruits and custards? It's reported that the very first cherry pie was baked for Queen Elizabeth I during the 16th century. As English settlers arrived in America, pies came along with them. Each version had often thick, heavy crust with rough flour, and pies soon became a trademark American dish, and today are heavily associated with traditional American life. When soldiers were asked why they were going off to war during World War II, they replied, "For Mom and homemade apple pie." So today is Homemade Pie Day. Have a slice on me. And here are today's words to the wise: a good education makes a difference. Today's words to the wise: a good education makes a difference. You can find these words to the wise in the book entitled Words to the Wise by somebody known as Freddie Bell. Thanks so much to all of our special guests for being with us today on New Beginnings, especially U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar and former North High Bowlers Championship coach Larry McKenzie stopping in, talking about his wonderful, wonderful career. Of course, Leibel Sternbach with finance information. So glad they were here to help share information with you concerning their background and advice to help us to live better lives. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend. I'm Freddie Bell, reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye for now.